Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
Chilean-born artist Alfredo Jarre has spent much of his career making art out of human crisis. He creates giant installations, including photography that he takes. And mostly what he's interested in is exploring how huge global crises affect single individuals. His most famous work is called The Rwanda Project. It was 6 years in the making, and Steve Paulson wanted to know why he went to Rwanda.
I felt that the media was not treating this the way it should have been treated. And I was really disgusted by the political reaction, which was no reaction whatsoever. In a moment of sadness, rage, in a moment of insanity, I decided to go.
To go to Rwanda?
To go to Rwanda, to witness the killing, the genocide, and to express my solidarity.
You went there while the killing was still going on?
I went there at the end of July, early August. So the genocide officially ended in mid-July, so it wasn't that active at that moment. But what we saw was just the immediate aftermath of the genocide.
I'm wondering how you saw your role in comparison to, I don't know, the way a journalist might approach this, or a documentary filmmaker, people whose job is to try to render the events that have happened. You are a visual artist. How do you respond to such an immense tragedy?
Yeah, I felt freer, completely freer. I felt at times they were laughing at me because they were walking around with these huge cameras, with huge lenses, normally with two or three cameras hanging from their neck, and I was traveling around with this very little thing that looked absolutely ridiculous. But
with your little camera.
Yeah, my little camera. But I had the luxury of time, so I've always said that I would prefer to spend 5 hours talking to someone, to a survivor, to try to understand and take a little snapshot with my little camera than covering it the way it was covered with these huge machines taking these spectacular photographs and then running around to the next tragedy. I mean, so I have the luxury of time. And I had no preconceived notions of what I was going to do with this material. I wanted to understand. I wanted to see, to witness. If I could help, I would help. But my mission was to accumulate information. And then later I was going to decide, what can I do with this?
What did you come away understanding? I mean, you spent a lot of time there.
Well, I felt that human beings can do terrible things to each other. This is something I knew, of course, from history, but I had never experienced this in such a vivid and personal way. I went away feeling ashamed of being a human being. I went away wanted to commit suicide because I couldn't believe that as a human being living in the world today, I had allowed this to happen. I felt guilty.
Because, I mean, there were news reports that this was going on while it was going on. And in fact, there were plenty of reports that something terrible was going to happen even before it did.
Absolutely. But fortunately, it was, on one hand, played down. Second, most media did not use the word genocide, so we would not intervene because, as you know, there's a convention that forces countries to intervene if it is officially a genocide. So the State Department asked not to use that word, and most media complied. The way the media works today, everything is decontextualized. You open a paper, you might find a couple of photographs about this horror. But next to it, you have the new model from Toyota, and then the next page you're invited to take vacations in Hawaii at a great price by this airline, and then you move on. So everything is decontextualized. So an image of pain, of suffering, is drowned in a sea of consumption in the media today. So it's very difficult to affect change through the media the way it is built now.
So what do you do then? I mean, you as an artist coming into this, dealing, I mean, you live in this world of media consumption.
Well, I exchange the large audience that journalists have with time. And I have the luxury of time to work on these projects. And I confront a much smaller audience, but I do it in my own terms. So I can create a space. I can create an experience for the audience where I can tell them a story. And if I succeed, the audience will spend enough time with me, in my hands, listening, watching, understanding, and hopefully they are being illuminated by this story and they will understand what happened and perhaps even move them to action.
I would think one of the things that would be particularly difficult with something like the Rwanda genocide is just the scale. I mean, a million people were killed in a very short period of time, and it's too big to grasp. You know, I mean, how do you sort of scale it down so that we can respond in some way?
Yeah, that's one of the strategies that is key to this project, because if you work only from numbers, then you don't go anywhere. So you had to reduce the tragedy to names, to stories, to personal stories. So my projects did that. I tell the story, specific story of this woman that was attending church with her husband and her two sons and her daughter, and I give names. And I tell what the story of what happened, and then I follow her.
What did happen?
A Hutu death squad came into the church where they had sought refuge, and they killed more than 400 people. And this woman, Gutete Merita, managed to escape miraculously with her daughter, Marie-Louise Uno Mararunga. But her husband and her two sons were killed. And so they hid in a swamp for many weeks, and I found them in that swamp, and then they came out. They were going out that night only in search of food. So she told me her story, and we took her to the hospital in the jeep we had rented. And I spent an entire evening with her, and she told me the story. And my mission was how to tell that story to the world. So basically, I was able to tell a story with one name, one story with real acts, so I could contextualize it properly.
What did you do with that? I mean, how did you make art out of that?
Well, this particular work with Gutete is called The Eyes of Gutete Merita. And it's one of the most well-known pieces of the series. It consists of a dark space, a hallway, where a story is told in a line of light on one wall. So the letters are illuminated. They are very small, so you have to read them closely. And I tell the story of the genocide, and I tell the story of Gutete. It measures approximately 20 feet long. So you walk along this line of light. And the text ends with me saying, I remember her eyes, the eyes of Gutete Emerita. And then after this, you move to a second space. It's a dark space, in the middle of which you'll find a table, a light table, that is also very big, 18 feet by 22 feet. And this light table is illuminated, of course, and on top of which you find a million slides.
A million slides for the million people killed.
Right. And so you approach these slides, and you realize that on the table, all around, you have loops, magnifiers, inviting you to take a slide and look at it through the loop, like a photographer would do. And you see Gutete's eyes looking at you, the eyes of Gutete that witnessed the genocide that we refuse to see. And then you take another slide, and it's again the eyes of Gutete. Another one, again the eyes of Gutete. So I repeated this image a million times. We have shown this work some 25 times around the world. And the first time we showed it, it was in Australia. On opening night, the museum guard asked me to come to his security room. He wanted to show me something. And he said, please come. This is in the middle of the opening. I was talking to people outside. And I observed through the security cameras people in the room where the piece is shown. And he said, look at this man or look at this woman, please. And I start looking at them through the security cameras. And I see them looking at the slide through the loop. And then suddenly, they put it in their pocket. These are the eyes of a survivor.
Yeah.
So the curator had come with me because they wanted me to take a decision. Mm-hmm. I said, let me watch. Let me watch. I want to see more. So I spent 30 minutes in this surveillance cabin. And I discovered that the body language of the people, because I was looking at them through a camera from the ceiling, was not the body language of someone who was stealing. I felt they were doing something else, that they were taking with them something like a memento mori, like a memory, something important for them. They were doing it in a different way than stealing. So I took a decision that was not part of the piece. It was not designed like this. I said to the curator, let them do it. Don't say anything. Ask the guards to look the other way. Do not encourage it. Do not mention it. But if people does it, let them do it. So today in 2015, there are more than 17,000 slides in the homes of people around the world.
Wow.
And I feel that they wanted that image.
What I find so interesting about your project is it's kind of counterintuitive, I think. I mean, the obvious thing to do would be if you want to let people know about the level of atrocity, you show a lot of horrible images. You know, you have museums full of just of people getting butchered by machetes in Rwanda, but you didn't do that.
I felt it was the wrong strategy, and for many reasons, for aesthetical reasons and ethical reasons. The ethical reasons is that I feel and I hope that I can talk about violence without making the victim suffer again that violence. I can talk about poverty without making, with my representations, these people even more poor. So I felt that I didn't want to fall into the trap of this pornography of violence. That imagine the relatives of the victims when they see their loved ones in a newspaper or in a magazine, then they see that many times, and where they have become nothing but corpses.
Alfredo Jarre, talking about one of the installations in his Rwanda Project series. Steve Paulson talked with him.